trying to figure out like his work ethic, his character. And then I'm going to study the game logs and when his stats to get a good feel for that.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Vance Catlin, the Senior Vice President of Pro Scouting with the Indiana Pacers. Coach Catlin's career in basketball spans decades, starting with the Pacers before making the transition into college with the Michigan's Women's State Basketball Program. Coach Catlin would then take a video coordinator role back with the Indiana Pacers in working his way up the program, serving in multiple scouting and front office roles, while also holding a stint with the Indiana Fever. Over the years, he has built a reputation for his sharp eye for talent, his ability to identify players who fit a specific system, and his commitment to long-term development. Coach Catlin has been a key part of assembling competitive programs, evaluating both domestic and international talent, and collaborating with coaches and executives to build winning cultures and teams. His experience covers every facet of scouting, from early identification to final roster decisions, giving him a rare insight into what it takes to succeed at the highest levels. In this episode, we discuss best practices for growing in an MBA program over the years, a breakdown of the process once talent is identified in an MBA organization, and how to separate box score stats from knowing if a player will be good in your specific systems. Please welcome to the podcast, Vance Catlin. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide. Coaches, and thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today to share with you a little more. And on the other side, we have the Senior VP of Pro Scouting with the Indiana Pacers. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Vance Catlin. Excuse me, Coach Catlin, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Hey, thanks for having me.
No, you got it, man. We appreciate you. Congrats on the year, too. Unbelievable season.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, first off, it's great to be able to see what you guys have done. I know Alan is a local, so I know he's a fan over there, always talking about the Pacers, and it's great to be able to see, especially you guys just blowing out of the water this past year. But more specifically, you individually, so your career and your background is very unique. And I say unique in regards to, one, not only have you been with one program for a while, but you also stayed relatively in the same area, too. You've stayed in Indiana pretty consistently, other than a stint over with Michigan State. So it's great to be able to talk about that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people. I know that's not, as I said, a very common thing, but definitely love to hear a little bit more about your story. So far in your career, you've evaluated talent at so many different levels. You've seen the college, you've seen the high schools, you obviously have seen the professional, international, all that. Now, if we went back to your first scouting trip, okay, if you can recall what that was, where that was there anything that you remember about it that you now look back and you're like, yeah, I was extremely inexperienced, or maybe whatever it might have been, just talking about that first trip?
Yeah, so my first trip, it was actually a learning experience trip. I went to Des Moines, Iowa, to talk with the Iowa Energy coaches. And this was back in the day in the D-League when those guys were affiliated with multiple teams. So like you were allowed to talk to the coaches there. And the coach there, the head coach there at the time was Kevin Young. And one of their assistants was George Broski. And I mentioned that because it's been fun to kind of watch them grow through the years and watch myself grow through the years. But just kind of learning about, I was new, so I was trying to learn everything about the G-League and how that operated. And they were kind of, to welcome me and give me some tidbits, and which I take today. And now Kevin Young is the head coach at BYU. And prior to that, he had a stint with the 76ers and the Phoenix Suns. And George Broski, he's a scout with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that's another thing, just learning, growing your network through the years. And that's where it started, because a big part of the scouting is like the network and your ability to get clean and accurate information. Another one of my first actual scouting trip was watching the Charlotte Hornets against the Miami Heat. And prior to starting my scouting job, I called a scout by the name of Jay Hillock, who was with the Bulls, tried to get advice on what to do, what not to do, and kind of my intro in there. And he was actually at my first game, and he was like a 20 to 30 year veteran scout, and you were just trying to soak up all the information and then go from there. And I just tried to apply all those things like through the years from their experiences.
Who have been some of your, I guess, maybe some benchmark mentors along the way, Vance? Because I don't know that people listen to this truly understand how much, and I use this word complimentary as much as you can, but like a club or mafia that the NBA is. It is as tight-knit as you can get from a relationship perspective. Mm-hmm. But who have been some of the people, maybe as you've moved along the way, that become your revolving door mentors? You tend to reach back to them over and over again.
Yeah, I would say like I've taken a piece from every coaching staff I've been a part of. And I'll start back to Illinois State, where I was a student manager. Coach Yap, Coach Swartout, Coach Thomas Cuddy, learned so much from them. And then starting with the Pacers, Dan Burke, he's probably my ultimate mentor. He's a guy that like he took time to just watching him, how he operates, how he dissects, how he studies, how he's consistent. And then just his character. He's a guy that I try to emulate on every aspect, not only in basketball, but in life. Going to Michigan State, Coach Joanne P. McCauley, very instrumental. And then when I came back to the Pacers, I worked with the Fever too. So working with coaches like Brian Winters, Lynn Dunn, Julie Plank, like those people were very instrumental for me. And then coming back with the Pacers, Rick Carlisle, Jim O'Brien, Frank Vogel, Brian Shaw, Jim Boylan, like all those guys were great. I just tried to take a piece of everyone and try to apply it to what I'm doing now.
Yeah, no, that's quite a lineup right there, man. You start dropping some of those names. And I know you spent some time on the women's side. I actually did that at Texas for a year. Uh-huh. Great, unbelievable experience. Is there anything in particular that the women's game taught you that just either that you've hung on to or maybe that it made you better than you expected?
I would say it's really the same. For me, basketball is basketball. Like they work the same. The terminology is the same. They prepare the same. And for me, like, that's what I take from it. Like, it's really the same, like the same type of mindset, the same type of preparation of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I thought their attention to detail was probably the one difference because guys with athleticism can cover up for a lot of sins. Yeah. And like late clock, a guy can go put his elbow in the rim and save the day. Yeah. Whereas women had to execute on the little things. I think that's just what I pulled from it. And again, I only did it for a year, but it felt like they had to rely more and they took more pride in the details because they had to use them successful because the athleticism thing was just different. And a guy can go make a great play at the end of the clock and you go watch film the next day and you're like, wait a minute, execution was terrible. Hmm. He just went and saved us real quick. No, that's good stuff. Good stuff.
So you mentioned, I know I said this early on, is you have been with the program, the pro scout, I should say, essentially for 13 years, but overall with the program, as you mentioned, I know you started there, ended up moving away Michigan State and then coming back, going to the Fever and then coming back, where now you've been there for roughly a total of about 21 years, which that essentially right there is that's growing in a program. And that's something that maybe modern day you don't see as much, especially from a coach's perspective, as let alone a player's perspective, but somebody growing in a program. I believe 3 of the years were an assistant, 5 years were as the, or excuse me, assistant video coordinator, 5 as the video coordinator, and then 13 as where you are now and grown into from the pro scout to the VP. But just talk about one growing in a program, the years, the being able to stay and building the relationships, and then obviously seeing yourself over 21 years go from a video intern to now being the VP of pro scouting. Just talk about that growth.
Yeah, I would say, like, I first of all, I enjoyed the process every kind of step of the way. I'm one of those guys where I'm definitely loyal. loyal to the program. I try to knock out my current role. Like, I try to be a star in my current role. And I think from there, everything takes care of itself. You want to be where, like, they give you, you start with one task and then it grows and grows throughout the years as far as, like, your roles and responsibility. I think once you take care of one role, it can continue to grow and you trust the process. And I'm not looking for the next opportunity like that. I'm trying to kill my current role, knowing that I think it can lead to other opportunities. And that's my mindset in basketball and in life.
You know, the Patriots, when they were really in their dynasty mode there for pretty much at the start of your career, all the way through. So you're going back roughly 20 years when the Patriots were getting started, but they had an organizational motto. Belichick had his in the locker room that was called "Do Your Job." Everybody's heard about that. But they also had a front office motto, and that motto was "The more you can do, the more you can do." And you pretty much, and the Pacers have pretty much embodied that, the way they have remained stable. Because people, they would rather promote from within, mm-hmm. as opposed to always bringing people, poaching from other organizations.
Right.
But
right.
You've embodied that mentality, because as you've shown, you can do more. They've allowed you to do more, and here you are.
Now you can take one responsibility and you grow from there, and you're great. You're great at every day, and you have to just come with that mindset as if you're in a job interview every day. And I think over a long period of time, it can take you for a long way. And there's no promises in this industry, but I think if you try to be about the right things and do the right things consistently over time, I believe you'll be rewarded for that.
Yeah, for sure. And don't get yourself fired on this next question, but do the best you can with it. Uh-huh. Because obviously a lot of coaches that listen to us would probably be curious about this. And this is Coach Carlisle's second time around. So I don't know, were you there the first time around or right at the back end when he was there? So you've seen two versions of Rick Carlisle, really.
Yeah, for sure. So
talk about briefly maybe how he's evolved and grown. Piece one of this question. Piece two is, what's his superpower? Because every coach in the league has a thing that really, that's what makes them. Talk about that question as a two-piece deal there.
Yeah, when I was first around Coach Carlisle, I was assistant video coordinator. And I think his superpower is his attention to detail. He leaves no stone unturned. His ability to really lock in and dissect and go over not only through film, but on the court, and doing it perfectly and leaning on his coaching staff and trusting his coaching staff to help generate the accurate info and being able to dissect that and relay it to the players to where they can believe it and execute it on the court. I think that's the superpower. And then just the consistency of it and not letting anything slide and holding guys accountable to all that. I think that's the superpower for sure. Yeah. And then as far as evolution of coaching, like he before, I would say we called a lot of plays very direct from that standpoint. And then over time, now it's more reads, and he trusts those guys to make reads versus calling a play every time. And then, like, I think he's been able to adapt through a defensive minded team and then through offensive minded teams that thrive with ball movement and player movement, and being able to trust the right guys to execute his game plan. And then you kind of see what's happened over the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. No, that makes total sense, because he's found the great balance of structure and freedom, mm-hmm. it feels. And it seemed like he'd be a heavy structure guy in the past, mm-hmm. where it was all structure. Yep. But now it's become more freedom, but guys still understand, you know, where the guardrails are. You can still play fast, but don't break the speed limit. Be under control.
Yep.
And so it's been beautiful to watch, man, just to see a guy like that evolve the way he has.
Oh, yeah.
I got to say, there's two things that you mentioned. One for Coach Carlisle was accountability. I think that's one of the biggest things that people overlook in a program. If you can't hold your kids accountable, you can't obviously hold yourself accountable. Kind of. And going off of that, the consistency aspect, as you mentioned, doing the small tasks, taking on the little things like it's a big task, and being able to see those grow and then more tasks ultimately come. I got those two words from all of that, the accountability and consistency. And I think that's great, because as much as that sounds cliche or like obvious, it's one of those things that's just sitting in front of you that you don't realize is actually what going to help you get to those next spots. So that's great. And over time, it didn't take you, respectfully, it didn't take you 2 years to be able to become the VP of like pro scouting, right? It took you, it, so obviously it takes time, accountability, consistency, and then you got to where you are now. So it obviously worked. When you're looking at players, mm-hmm. we always got to ask, right? Like some pros, some cons, some things that you see in guys that maybe are a turnoff, some things that you see that were like really stand out to guys. Mm-hmm. But when you're watching guys, has there ever been a situation or a time where you're like, all right, I really am interested in somebody. Then you go and sit like courtside or at a game, you're watching them live, and then you really got turned off by something. And then if so, like what type of things do you notice like that kind of turn you off or away from an athlete?
Yeah, I would say things that can turn you off is actually before the games. So say for a 7 o'clock game, I'll get there 2 hours prior to watch their pregame warm up and just seeing how they operate in the pregame. Some guys are going through the motions. They might not be taking it seriously. They could be joking around. Like those are things that kind of can turn you off. And then just body language wise throughout the course of a game, like you can tell if guys are scared of the moment. There's certain guys that are great during the regular season, but then in the playoffs, they can tense up or not be as confident. Those are things that show guys that who don't embrace physicality, like that shows, I would say, shot selection and not playing with your teammates and how you reply to mistakes, not picking up your teammate or piling on to make that guy feel worse. I would say that shows as well. Your coachability, your ability to listen and execute the game plan. You can see guys that are breaking the plays all the time. You can see that guys that are doing their own thing defensively, breaking the game plan, gambling and missing. I think those things kind of show live throughout the course of a game.
Yeah, for sure. I've been fortunate enough to watch you guys operate, man. Literally being your next door neighbor, I could flip the computer sideways and we could see the facility right through my window right here. But the thing I've always felt when I walk into you guys' facility mm-hmm. is this, it oozes professionalism. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is not only do the coaches come by and say hello when you're a guest, which is always a great gesture, but players walking in, they get to the floor, they have you could tell guys come in, they have an approach. I'm going to get with this coach, do my pre-practice stuff. But it seems like that professionalism has to help Coach Carlisle from an accountability perspective, because he's not having to manage all of the accountability. You guys always feel like more of a player-led team than a coach-led team. No, which no takes problem. that takes the pressure off him. Yeah, there's times he's got to command the room mm-hmm. and bark a little bit and put the film on pause and mm-hmm. say, yo, this can't happen. I get that. But it just feels like from man to man throughout the roster, a lot of professionalism, and which has created, it feels like more of a player-led team versus mm-hmm. a coach-led team. And so finding guys that have that professionalism and that ownership of themselves before they come into the building feels like a big deal.
No doubt. And once guys are in the building, like that switch is flipped and we take on our leaders were Halliburton and Siakam and James Johnson. And we take on their personality. There's a plan in place for every player, not only from the training room to on-court vitamins. And we try to execute that consistently every day. And then over time, like we've seen the fruits of that labor.
Yeah. No doubt. You could probably throw a guy like TJ McConnell in there too, from a leadership perspective.
No doubt.
Talk about being a star in his role. I came to a practice a few years back and I was leaving and he was shooting free throws at the basket there where you kind of walk out the side door. Uh-huh. And I coached against him when I was in Charlotte.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think he was at Duquesne at the time. Uh-huh. And I think he had 26 on us. It feels like he's probably still scoring on us. This podcast is going on, but I just went over to him. And I just told him, congratulations. I said, you are who I thought you were. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're in this gym is not shocking.
No doubt.
But he feels like another guy you could tack on to that. Those three guys you mentioned from a leadership perspective, just because he embodies a lot of what you guys are about. Feels like.
No doubt.
So, Coach Catlin, I got to ask this. So, you said you show up 2 hours before a game, kind of reverting back. What was something, Mage, who was it that said, I remember it was you who told me the story that somebody would always show up early before. Do you know what I'm talking about?
As a scout?
As a scout. Maybe not as a scout. There was a head coach who was going and they would always show up. What it's making me think of is exactly that. And I was going to ask a question off of it, more or less. If that's something that's like normal for scouts is to show up early, is that just something that you do individually to show up for pregame? Do you feel like you get a lot more information on somebody from what pregame rather than in game? Or is that just something that you've learned and started doing yourself?
Yeah, no, like I think it's a prereq. You want to, because a lot of times, like the guys who are first working out, like that, those are maybe the guys that don't play, get to play in the game. So like you get to look at them that way. And then a big piece of scouting is networking. Other scouts are there. You can talk with them, network with them. You can talk with the coaching staffs on the opposing teams or home team. Is this getting your base of information and growing a network or starting a network? And that's vital to ultimately be able to get the right information on everyone.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I think there's probably lots of generally, and most guys show up early, I would think. Mm-hmm. I think probably the separator in scouting is what do guys do with that time? Because some guys may show up 2 hours early, but then they might be hanging out, maybe on their phone a little bit. Maybe they're in the building, but they may not be locking in on some of the same things that you're talking about, right? So it's being there 2 hours, but then what are you doing with that 2 hours, that hour and a half before pregame warm-up start?
No doubt that
being efficient with that time is a really big deal, because being in the building is one thing. What you're doing when you get there, whole different story.
No doubt. That's all a part of the job. Just like when the players step in the building, you flip the switch. Once I get in that arena, you flip the switch. And
yeah, no doubt.
So I want to ask from the other perspective. All right. So now you're at the game, you see this guy, you take, it's a green flag. He's exactly what you want, right? Mm-hmm. What's the process like behind the scenes? And you don't have to necessarily go over every step, but at least just give people an idea as to how a program works, especially a large program such as the Pacers. So you just noticed this guy that was completely under the radar. You're like, all right, I like him. What do you like? How does that process work from there? Do you go to the next person, pass them the information? Is it on you? How does that look?
Yeah, like I would say, like for me, I see him one time live, I like him, then I schedule to see him again, and he perform in the same way in all the different aspects. Then I'm going to watch him on film. I like to use Synergy where I can watch him through a detailed breakdown of different types of offensive structures or defensive structures. Then I like to use Hoop One to watch my full game. So I'm going to watch full games on him. And then the next piece is I'm going to try to get some intel on him, trying to figure out like his work ethic, his character. And then I'm going to study the game logs and when his stats to get a good feel for that. And then I'm going to start the process of recommending him to our upper front office and telling them to get some eyes on him. And then the last piece, like the guy needs to perform, continue to perform consistently. And then especially when they see them, and if everything lines up, like how you told them, then it starts to get some traction and then it can go from there.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, when I first started recruiting Vance, you would always hope, you cross your fingers, like you tell your head coach about a guy. Yeah. Yeah. And then you cross your fingers when he goes to see him. It's, come on, man. You at least got to give my man a reason to be in that gym. You know what I mean? Like, you probably felt that, especially early on. You go into a meeting and you stand on a guy.
Yeah.
And then maybe, you know, Pritchard or somebody else is going to put eyes on them. Mm-hmm. And then you had that little moment of truth. Yeah. You're like, come on, man. Like, you better do something when my guy comes to see you.
No doubt.
But then over time, the more you do it, you don't have that nervousness as much, because your confidence in your own eyes.
Right.
And your confidence in what grows. So then it becomes like when you go into more meetings and more, you see more guys, then it's like, you can go, yeah, he's one of us, coach, guys. Like, this guy's one of us. So
No doubt.
You go from that tenseness of hoping the dude does when an upper front office person watches him, to now it's like confidence.
Yep.
So now when you walk in, you trust your eyes, you trust all this time, all these reps. Just like that you've had all these years, So now that confidence is, yeah, this guy can play. We can get him at the trade deadline or whatever it is, or he got one more year left on his deal. He'll be a free agent next year. We got to talk to this guy come July 1st or whatever right. it is.
No, no doubt. And you want to stack up wins over time, and through that gains confidence in your voice, confidence and on your opinions and what they and how they value the, your opinions.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. We talk about coaching voice out here all the time for mm-hmm. young coaches. That's the number one thing. But having a voice in the room in the front office, yep. that's a whole different. That's the same thing, right? Just as a coach has a voice, like you developing that voice and that conviction, yep. you know, in what you say over time. That's a big deal because everybody feels if you're stuttering and say, yeah, this, yep. there's this guy, Caputo, he's decent. I like him. He's a 6'8" stretch guy a little bit. We can do some stuff. Nice. It's like, the room is, wait a minute, nice. Man. Are you really feeling this guy or not? So versus, hey, this dude, Doug Caputo, man, I saw him. I watched the Chatham film. This guy is long. He's a multi-positional defender. He can stretch the floor. He can shoot the ball. He facilitates, really plays well through the elbow. So then you're going, boom.
Sounds pretty accurate.
That's a totally, yeah, I knew you was going to agree with
that. Pretty accurate, but hey.
Yeah, that's a totally different conversation than the first one. But when we're talking about that confidence and conviction,
yep.
that's a big deal. And coaches need to hear that. And obviously people with front office aspirations, that's a big deal too.
No, it definitely goes a long way. And I will also say, like, the middle, they don't want to really hear about the middle. Like, they want to hear you're really high on somebody or you're not as high, because the middle doesn't really help them. I would say, want to say that too.
Yeah, for sure. Because either we're going to put this guy's name on the board or yep. let's take him off the board. Come draft time, third week of June, that we want, there shouldn't be any doubts on this board. Whoever's up there is, that's who we're, you know. That's what we feel, however we feel about the however many guys are up there.
Uh-huh.
So I want to ask too about, especially going off of that, talking about how we're mentioning the individual skill sets, right? We talked about some of the red and green flags that you would see in somebody, but then how does somebody separate themselves from box score stats, especially for the NBA? So like when you're seeing a guy, right, you see him, he could be out there dropping 30 points, and for the Pacers right now, that might not maybe translate to what you're looking for. Obviously, it all depends on what you need, what you're looking for, and what you need to be able to help the team grow. How do you separate, like, the box score stats from individual skills? Like, maybe has there ever been a person where you saw that wasn't really putting up the stats and the numbers, but you're like, this is the guy. Like, this guy can do exactly what we need. Have you ever seen something like that, and what kind of skills helped set them apart?
Yeah, I would say right now, like your motor and like your physical and mental toughness, I think that really separates you. Your ability to play within the flow of the game, being able to be aggressive, but also being able to take care of the ball, like your shot selection, and then making open shots that kind of can come to you. I would say like your ability to play team defense, your motor and your attention to detail, as far as like crashing or rebounding or come back into play to rebound. I would say if you're a point guard, your ability to get downhill and be able to make the right read, draw the defense, kick it out, or showing your ability to finish. If you have that in your package, when guys go under, are you able to make that shot? And then just like the ability to be confident when things aren't going well, say you missed your first five shots, are you going to be confident to take that next one? I look at things like that. I look at things like, if your team is up 20 or down 20, now are you going to be feeling free to make those shots? Or are you a guy like, can you play in the clutch? Are you missing badly when the game is really on the line? Or are you a guy that you only make these shots when you're up 20, down 20? Are you ready to play? Are you ready to play when you come off the bench? Does it take you four or five possessions to get loose and get in the flow of the game? Or are you ready to go right away? Like, those are some things that can separate yourself, both positively or negatively, in my book.
Yeah. Scouting legend, and he's done more college amateur stuff, but he used to come to Ohio State a lot. And I know you know him, George Felton.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Scouting legend. And I remember he would come watch us at practice. He pulled me aside after practice, and his number one question all the time was, if we had to put him in a game tomorrow, what's he going to bring us?
Yep.
And it always made me be specific with the answer mm-hmm. because can you put your fingerprints on the game in a moment's notice?
Yep.
you know, and I used to love that question because it was so specific. It was so like clear. And is the biggest jump, and this is probably more, I know you focus more on the pro personnel side, mm-hmm. but obviously you see all the rookies transition and guys come in, you're around the summer league stuff a lot too.
Yep.
Is the biggest hurdle from amateur international guys coming in as rookies, is the biggest hurdle them understanding the value of impacting winning and doing impactful things to help win as opposed to not always scoring? Because they're used to scoring as being their main fingerprint, but now mm-hmm. you have to find other ways to impact winning. Is that the biggest hurdle you feel that players have to deal with?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Like finding what ways can get you on the court and get you to get on the court and then earn more minutes from there. I would also say the speed of the game, like learning, like because gaps close quicker, whether you're driving or you're trying to get a shot off, or like the reads you got to make, both offensively and defensively, like those come a lot quicker. And like in the minute that can slow down for you and you're familiar with the system and you're reacting more than trying to read and play the game and you're playing a little bit faster. I think those are the biggest hurdles I see rookies have to go through.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, it's highway to – it's city driving to freeway driving, for sure.
Yep. Yep.
My favorite thing that you said a couple minutes ago was making open shots that come to you was one of the things. And mm-hmm. I love that so much because, one, I feel like I have played with or at least seen more than enough people who take shots. They're like – but I was open. It's yeah, but you just completely went out of your way, dribbled downhill. There was a guy in your face when you had a wide open guy in the corner. Like it didn't come to you. You forced yourself upon that shot. And for you saying that, that says a ton because you're looking for guys who it just naturally comes to you. If the gate opens up, they get rid of it or not. But I'm glad you covered that because that's especially something that I feel like a lot of guards, they like, oh, they go down, they'll get downhill, they put up a shot, and they're like, oh, yeah, it was a good look. It was like, was it, though? Like, people don't know the difference between a good shot and a bad shot nowadays, I feel like.
Yep.
It seems like, too, at your level, there's two guys pretty much on each team that have a sonic green light.
Yep.
And then the other 9 or 10 or 11 are role guys.
Yep.
So – if you're a role guy, just like you said, Doug, like being able to let the game come to you, being aggressive, but it's like aggressive patience,
yep.
right? Like doing things that fit you, but also not trying to get too thirsty.
Yep.
To, because you may go from 17 shots a game, and then as a rookie, if you're lucky, 4 shots a game.
Yep.
That's if you're lucky as a rookie.
Yep. Yep.
And so now can you still put fingerprints on the game with getting 4 shots and 7 minutes or 8 minutes as opposed to that 17 that you were getting playing 35 minutes in college? That it just feels like that's such a big deal, man. And the guys that can figure that out quicker are the ones that have the smoother transitions, it feels like.
No, and that's 100%. That's 100%.
So Coach Catlin, what we'll do is we ultimately want to take you back to where you started, and where you started is where you're at now. So one of the things going full circle, if you look back on your career so far, your first position ultimately being the video intern with the Pacers, right? And just if there was any advice that you could give your younger self starting in the coaching profession, what piece of advice would you share with yourself?
I would say soak up every little information and enjoy the day-to-day. Take as many notes as you can. And I would just say, just enjoy the process every step of the way. Come ready to learn and come ready to work. Treat people the right way. Approach every day with positivity. And I think good things will happen and good things will take care of itself.
Yeah. Part of your younger self advice is wash, rinse, repeat.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. In a sense, you've almost lived out the advice that you would give to your younger self. And look, obviously, it has you sitting right where you are, man. Listen, before Dougie lands a plane here, I just want to say, number one, been great to get to know you just more and more over this past few years. Appreciate the access when you guys have let me come in and watch from time to time. And more importantly, really happy for you but happy that you're with a great organization. Not all 30 teams are the same. It is hard to get to find where you are. There's a reason why you stayed, because the atmosphere is that good. Yep. And the people around you, above you, below you, the people are that good. So don't mess with happy, which is that's a great motto to live by. And you pretty much embodied that, man. So again, just thanks so much for doing this. This has been great for us.
Oh, yeah. No, I appreciate you guys. And it's been great getting to know you over the years. And I always enjoyed our conversations and looking forward to the future.
Doug, this is a dude that if you go to a Pacer game, and again, this is just why organizations are special. Guy comes and finds me and says hello. And there's like 7 minutes on the clock before tip off. I'm like, what are you doing up here, man? But he just comes to say hello. So organizationally, there's a reason why certain organizations are who they are and why they're good. But this is a classic example in this guy right here. So,
well, I mean, that it definitely speaks volumes as to why you guys got the success that you had this past year, too.
No doubt. Volume.
And why you've been able to grow in one program for 21 years. Completely putting that one aside. But no, we do appreciate it. We say it to everybody, but genuinely, mean thank you for giving us the time to be able to share your knowledge. I know there's a lot of people who are going to be listening who will at least take something away from it. So thank you very much. Yeah. And yeah, we're appreciative of being able to chat with you. And everybody out there, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, all you coaches out there, keep working and keep rising, coaches. See you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.